Hello and welcome into this season of the 8th Day Coaching Podcast. I am working on a new series here called Catholic, Single, and Flourishing, and I really want to speak to Catholic singles in their 20s and 30s to address the loneliness, the wandering, and the pressure that we often feel here. The goal with this series is to help Catholic singles live their God-inspired call today and also pave a path for the future. The whole idea here is you don't have to wait for your vocation today. You can live it now. And I want to invite you to engage in the conversation on social media. I want you to check out a free ebook that I created just for you called Breaking the Cycle of Pressure in Action. And you can sign up to receive that on CatholicSinglesSolutions.com. I will put all these resources in the show notes. So if you're a loyal listener, even if you're not a Catholic single, there's definitely still value for you here. Please listen to these episodes and share with your friends. You're listening to the 8th Day Coaching Podcast, where I share helpful insight and interview elite-level leaders to help you overcome stress and master your time, money, and God-inspired future. I'm your certified professional coach, Chad Etzel. Well, everyone, welcome back to this episode of the 8th Day Coaching Podcast. I'm your host, Chad Etzel, and today I'm joined by Dr. Edward Shree. Dr. Shree is a mentor of mine. He actually was one of my professors at the Augustine Institute when I studied there for grad school. And then in addition to that, he directed my master's thesis. So it's very awesome to have him joining on this show. He is an accomplished author and speaker who serves at parishes and conferences in the Catholic world. He also leads pilgrimages to Rome and the Holy Land, and now serves as the Senior Vice President of Apostolic Outreach at Focus. But of course, most importantly, he's husband to his wife, Beth, and father of 8 children. And today we're going to be revisiting one of his more recent books, The Art of Living, and we're going to be discussing how it relates to the Catholic single life. Dr. Shree, it's a real privilege to have you on the podcast today.
Great to be here, Chad. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, and you've had some big life changes within the last couple of weeks. Your first child, your daughter, got married. What's it like being a father of a daughter who's now married?
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a whole big new life change, but it was so beautiful. I shared about this actually a little bit at the SEEK conference in St. Louis the other week. It was one of the best experiences of my life, I will say. Just the love of seeing the love of my daughter, Madeline, and her husband, Caden, and celebrating that. The love of all the family coming together, all the siblings, like they were just so energized. There were people telling us that the boys were glowing when Madeline's making the vows. Like they were the groomsmen. And so some people were sitting close up there at great angles. They just saw them just beaming, just so proud and excited. And it really was just a whole day long. I can't describe it. It was just so beautiful. That experience. So, but yeah, being a father, she's married a good Catholic man, you know, so I know that they've got that as the foundation as they begin this adventure together in the sacrament of matrimony. And, people said, what somebody came up to me, it was actually one of my kids, since I'm like, oh, Dad, so how do you feel now that you lost Madeline? I go, I didn't lose Madeline. She's still my daughter. I gained a son-in-law.
Yes. Right. Right. That's beautiful. And especially for you, one of the books that stands out to me that was big in my own formation within the last decade was Men, Women, and the Mystery of Love. And for you, having written on these topics for so long, the theology of the body, love and responsibility, and so on, to one, experience it yourself in your marriage, but then to see it lived out with your daughter now, who's now married, I'm sure that's a different perspective that you can see and kind of internalize for yourself.
Yeah, it's fun. You know, I know she read the book and he read the book at different earlier in their life. And it was just great to see them really live some of the wonderful principles from JB2's Love and Responsibility in their courtship and dating and in their engagement. And now to have it lead to the altar and to marriage, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Yes, wonderful. And today we're not going to be talking about Men, Women, and the Mystery of Love as much as I'd love to talk about that one. Again, it was a very profound book. I found that one of your other books, one of the more recent books called The Art of Living, was actually most relevant for this particular audience. And this audience has heard me say it before. I really want to help Catholic young adult singles live their vocation today, but also prepare for their vocation in the future. So whatever it is their calling is, whether it's that bigger vocation of call to marriage or religious life, or whether it's more of what is God calling you right now? That's what I really want people to stay present to the present moment, but also still preparing for the future. So I found The Art of Living is really a key book for this. And tell us a little bit about what The Art of Living is all about and why you think it was so important for our world today.
Yeah, so the title comes from something Pope Benedict once said. He wrote about how in our modern secular age, the problem isn't simply that we've, you know, lost a sense of God, religion, and theology. We don't know enough theology. We don't know the Bible well enough. We don't know the catechism well enough. No, don't get me wrong. He thinks that's a big crisis. He's written a lot on that. He's just saying that the problem is actually even worse than that, is that we've lost the basics of basic human values, the basics of how to live life. We don't know what it means to be a man, what it means to be a woman, what it means to live friendship. We don't know how to deal with conflict. We don't know how to live dating relationships well. We don't know how to build a strong marriage. We don't know how to raise children. We've lost the art of living. So yeah, there's a crisis. We don't know enough of our faith well. And everyone talks about, we don't believe Jesus is in the Eucharist, right? Like many Catholics don't believe the real presence of the Eucharist. And again, that's a huge, huge crisis. It's just that the problem is actually even worse. Like, we don't know the basics of how to live. The good news is that there's a long-standing tradition on how to live life and live our relationships well, because that's where we find our happiness, is in our relationship with God, first and foremost, and with each other. And there's a great tradition on these basic life skills, if you will, the basic habits that you need. They're called the cardinal virtues. And these four virtues go all the way back, not just to the early church and to Jesus, they go way back to the Old Testament Jewish scriptures. They knew the basic four cardinal virtues. And you see this in ancient Greek writers, people that weren't even from the Jewish Christian perspective, like Aristotle, Plato, and ancient Roman writers like Cicero. So this wasn't rocket science. It was kind of like the basic ABCs of how to live life that was passed on from father to son, from grandfather to grandson, from uncle to nephew, from pastor to his flock, from master to apprentice. You know, it's just generation to generation. Not that everyone lived it or understood it perfectly, but there was this sense in the culture for a long time that these were the key things you needed to live. And sadly today, I'm looking out my window here, like 99% of the people out there in the secular world have never even heard of the four cardinal virtues. They couldn't name them. Now, I'm going to go a next step here. I would say probably 95% of Catholics may not be able to name the four cardinal virtues. So if you're listening and you don't know the cardinal virtues, don't feel bad. It's part of the era. I didn't know them growing up. It's part of the era in which we're living. You know, that's what we're going to talk about them today. And even the upper echelon that might say, oh, I know what they are, you know, prudence and fortitude and temperance and justice, you know, I would say 99.9% of the people out there in the world that might be able to name the four cardinal virtues have no idea how they actually relate together to form an integrated human person. And what are the various sub virtues we need to be a prudent man? What are the virtues I need to be a courageous man? What are the vices that keep me from having the virtue of temperance? You know, it's like we don't know how it all works in my life, you know. So I wanted to write a book that would make it very accessible to the average layperson, taking the great wisdom of people like Aristotle and St. Thomas Aquinas, but make it really accessible and concrete for ordinary daily life. And that's the book, The Art of Living.
And we don't have a lot of TV shows on the cardinal virtues, or even going back to elementary school, they don't really teach that. And that's too bad. But I like the direction that you've gone, where here it is, it's not so much, hey, we got to preach a sermon of faith, where there's a time and a place for faith formation and content there. But to pull back, to step back a little bit and to just see how can we speak to people maybe who might be either a more secular audience or more just it's easier to relate to that as opposed to trying to teach somebody about the Trinity right away.
Yeah. I think there is now there is an element of preaching the gospel and introducing people that there is a God that loves you and Jesus Christ, all that. But I do find actually to go through some of the virtues actually can be helpful to awaken people. I got into this because I was teaching years ago, 20 plus years ago at Benedictine College, before Benedictine today is known as one of the top Catholic colleges in the country. But back in 1999, 2001, 2002, it was just growing in its Catholic identity back then. And most of the students there weren't going to mass regularly. They were not on fire with their faith. And so I had to teach moral theology, you know, to all these people that didn't want to be there. They were forced to take certain religious classes. And here I knew there'd be people sitting in the back going like, who are you to tell me how to live my life? Why does the Catholic Church, you know, trying to teach all this to me? You know, I don't want anyone imposing their views on me. So I had to think about how do I present the Catholic faith to these people? And again, most of them not practicing Catholics, like probably 85% of the people in the class were not practicing their faith. And so I spent most of the class, half of the semester, on the virtues, talking about the connection between virtue and friendship, that we need virtue to live our friendships well, to love. I can't just say, I want to be a good friend to you, or I want to be a good husband, or I want to be a good dad someday. Like, those are noble aspirations, but it actually requires virtue to do that. Just like I can't say, hey, I want to go play the violin. You know, now my teenage son, he can play the violin really well. He can play Bach and Beethoven. It's beautiful. I don't have the skill. If I try to play the violin, I'm just going to make screeching noise. It's going to be painful. I'm going to cause other people pain. The same thing is true with life. If I want to make a beautiful song with my life, I can't just say, oh, I want to be your friend. I want to have a great family. You know, I need virtue. I need generosity. I need patience. I need justice. I need self-control. I need courage. I need all these virtues so I can play a beautiful song with my life. And so if I actually am not intentionally going after virtue in my life, learning about the virtues, intentionally growing in virtue, then I'm going to end up causing people pain. I'm going to make a painful noise with my life that will end up hurting other people.
Yes. And that hits on a little bit of what you talk about with your subtitle being the cardinal virtue and the freedom to love. And in particular, you use that violin analogy. I've always liked that, or especially instruments where, we have freedom to bang on a keyboard or freedom to just whatever, but that's not real freedom, because real freedom is being able to, it's freedom for excellence as opposed to freedom from some sort of thing that's oppressing us.
Yeah. You know, I think if I told you, you know, hey, Chad, I heard you have to fly to LA next week. And I just said, oh, Chad, I value flying. I'm excited about flying airplanes. I get strong feelings about flying airplanes. Let me fly you to LA. There's no way you're getting in that cockpit with me as your pilot because I don't have the skills, right? And I think the same is true for friendship, for dating relationships, for marriage, for family life. Anyone can say, I love you. Like anyone, it's easy to say those words. Some people might actually sincerely mean it, but it's only the person that has virtue that's capable of loving you. I think, you know, one of the things I write about in the book is that I used to have a very individualistic understanding of the virtues. I think growing up, I mean, I heard about some virtues. I went to a good Catholic school. So I remember seeing banners about piety and temperance and fear of the Lord and courage. So I heard about them. I didn't really get a training. At least I don't remember. Probably I didn't. I just didn't learn, but it didn't stick. My understanding of the virtues were like, oh, I should grow in virtue because it's good for me. It's like my personal self-improvement plan. So I could be a better version of myself and, you know, improve. And, you know, I'll grow in fortitude. I'll grow in patience. And I'll grow in perseverance. It was like earning badges, like to be a good Boy Scout for Jesus. It was about me and my own personal self-improvement and maybe my relationship with God. But I think over the years, teaching it and really seeing what Aquinas and Aristotle were writing about, and then probably more so just seeing it in my own marriage and family, is that virtue isn't just for me. My wife needs me to be virtuous. My children need me to be virtuous. My colleagues in the office, my friends need me to be virtuous, because the more I grow in generosity, patience, courage, prudence, wise decision-making, the more I will do generous, patient, courageous, prudent things that bless the people in my life. But when I fall short in generosity. I'm selfish. I'm just thinking about myself and not thinking about the other person, not putting the other person before me. That's not a problem just for Edward Sree. That's a problem for my wife, Beth Sree, because she's going to feel the brunt of my lack of virtue when I'm just so caught up in my own project and not thinking about what she needs to go through in the day. So I end up hurting my wife. I don't want to hurt Beth. I love Beth, but because of my lack of virtue, I hurt her. I just wrote her a letter recently. I just thanking her. I just said, Beth, thank you for being so patient with me when I was so impatient with you. You know, and I feel badly. And so it was kind of an apology letter, you know, and telling how much I appreciate, like, how patient she was with me in that moment. But I, you know, same thing with my kids. Like, I can sometimes lose my temper and I can be too stern. And I don't want to do that. I don't want to wipe them out, but I know I do that. And I end up hurting my kids. I love them. I really do love them. And I think they know that, but I know that I don't love them as well as I should. And it's because of my lack of virtue. I need to grow in virtue so I can be a better dad. So I can, like, when they lose their shoe and we're late for mass 3 weeks in a row, I realize the bigger picture here, I don't need to get angry about this. You know, it's part of life. You know, they didn't do anything intentional here. We're going to deal with this. I shouldn't be grumpy. You know, I got to work on that. Right. One last example, you know, it's like in the workplace, you know, I need to be a courageous leader. Like, when there's hard things that we have to do, you know, let's say the board of directors wants us to do a certain new initiative and we already have our plates full in our department. It's like, you know, my team needs me to be courageous in that moment. They don't need me to be Eeyore, like Winnie the Pooh. Remember Eeyore? Oh, it's hard. How are we going to do this? Management doesn't understand. Leaders like that are not good leaders. No, I need to go to my team and say, all right, team, we've got to go do this over here. This is going to be hard. It's going to really stretch us like never before. I know we don't have the time. I'm not sure how we're going to do this. And acknowledge that we're human, you know, but say, but I believe in this team. We're going to figure it out. We're going to reprioritize. We can do this. They need me to be courageous and lead them to do hard things. So virtue isn't just for me. It allows me to love the people in my life better. And that's why I wanted to write this book.
Incredible. And I want to dig into that a little bit more, just especially we've thrown around the word love, but even still, sometimes that's lost in translation of what we mean by that. And so with that, I think you were teaching this in a class one time, and it was about how I think culture oftentimes sees love as it's just a given. You're just able to do love. But there's also this, which virtue is this training ground to be able to love. So what do we mean by love in this context of virtue and having the freedom to love?
Yeah, I think people in the culture think virtue is just a feeling. Like, oh, I got this emotion, you know, I got this romantic feeling, you know, or even it doesn't have to be romantic. It'd be, I have this feeling for my child. I want to love them. You know, that's not, the feeling is not love. Love is a decision. The catechism is clear, quoting Thomas Aquinas. Love is to will the good of the other, to choose what's best for someone else. But that act of the will requires virtue on my end, right? Because I may have an act of the will of, I just want sleep. You know, so I had some kids that were sick recently. They're throwing up and waking up in the middle of the night, and I don't want to deal with that. I mean, that's no fun. So my selfish side is frustrated. My selfish side, I don't want to deal with this. My selfish side, I'll just hope Beth deals with it, right? So I have to rise above that selfish side of me and live virtuously and say, you know what, even though this is going to be hard, it's going to be messy, I'm going to be exhausted, I got to help here. You know, and that's the inner drama of every human person.
Yes.
Is we're fallen and we always tend toward our own pleasure, our own comfort, what's interesting to us, what's easy for us. And what we're doing, we don't want to be changed, become more like Christ and live his virtues, living for others. And that's where we find our happiness. So to love is to will the good of the other. So to use that example, my little daughter that's waking up multiple times at night recently and having a stomach issue, like, if I'm going to love her isn't to just say, go, why are you doing this? You know, getting mad at her, or you just go to the toilet and take care of yourself. That's not loving, right? Even though it's, I don't get warm feelings from that. I really don't like vomit. I mean, that's one of the things I freak out about the most. So, but I have to rise above my feelings and love, you know, or the
Yes.
same thing. I could just say, oh, I'll just let Beth take care of this. You know, I won't get up and help at all.
It's
Now,
your
let me be
turn.
honest. Let me
It's
be
your turn,
clear.
dear.
My wife takes care of the vomit messes more than I do. She's the leader, you know, and because she knows how like I have a hard time with it. She's amazingly generous. But to sit back and do nothing and just sleep, that wouldn't be good. So I would get up, I'd go help find a bowl or go help, you know, get a towel or something. So like I think I need to do that to love Beth. You know, if I just roll over and say, oh, I just don't feel like helping today, that's not loving. You know, so love is not about feelings. It is about the act of the will, and that requires virtue to help me live according to what God has made me for.
Yeah, so it's this training ground through all of our life, getting to that point, 3 a.m. in the morning, somebody's vomiting, to be able to get out of bed, knowing, first of all, knowing what's good, knowing what's right, then to pick ourselves up and go take care of somebody else, because that is the self-sacrificial, loving thing to do. And so speaking specifically to the audience that with this podcast series that I'm doing with Catholic singles. You've been in ministry for several decades now, and so you've had interaction with different college students and young adults and so on. And I'm just curious as to, with this particular day and age and this particular audience, what are some of the struggles that you see with this audience that is either amplified or wholly different, these challenges that they're facing, than they faced before in decades past?
Like particular virtues that they're struggling with more now than maybe times past? Is that what you're getting at?
Either virtues or any other obstacles to virtues.
Okay. I'll name two. One is prudence. I'll come back to that one because I talk about that one all the time. Let me come back to prudence in a bit. Like I think that like people often ask me, what's the biggest one? And I'd say it's prudence. I would say maybe a second one, and I'm not going to say the normal thing. I think most people say, oh, it's probably lust, right? Like that's a big issue. There's all these addictions. You know, that's always been there. I think it's more pronounced today because of pornography and things, of course. But lust itself has always been there. It's just a deeper addiction today because of porn. So I would actually say because of social media vanity, I would label vanity. I think people are so worried about their appearance today in a way that just wasn't there in the early days of Focus, wasn't there before Focus when I was a young college student. I mean, it's always been there, but man, like the amount of time people spend thinking about, like, it could be in a conversation. Did I leave a good impression? Did I say the right thing? What are people thinking of me? Going out of their way to be liked. So, and I think that's coming from all the time that they're spending on their devices and the screens and constantly, you know, how much time I spend. Okay, I got to use this right filter and make the picture look just so great and tell the story the right way. And are people liking me? And I mean, I've had people tell me how many like they bought likes so that they could, I mean, they're good Christian people that pray every day and admitted that they did this. Like, I'm buying likes so that I can get people to think they like me. You know, I write about this in the book that the social media world has really warped us. Instead of just seeking virtuous friendships with the people in our real life, we're seeking to be praised by people far, far away that don't even know us. And I've got this little section here. I quote Cardinal Newman on this. Can I share this? And this is
Absolutely.
a great quote because he talks about how, you know, we're made to be praised by God. Like, am I living a virtuous life? Am I living a holy life? And let God and the angels praise me. And then Newman will go to say, you know, and getting praise from somebody that knows you well, like when my wife will honor me, or I have a good friend honor me, you know, a good virtuous friend honoring me that knows me, like that means a lot. But to seek the praise of people you don't even know, like the masses, is just unbecoming of a Christian. Now, he's writing this long before social media, but listen to this. He says, it is natural to love, to have deference and respect paid us by our acquaintance, people that know us. But the praise of a vast multitude of persons we never saw or shall never see or care about, This is a depraved appetite, the longing for likes, the longing for comments, the longing for followers. Define my identity in that. If he were alive today, he would say that's a depraved appetite. You bring that to confession. You beg God to liberate you from this. He says, as unmeaning as it is sinful, it is excusable in heathens. Like if you're a pagan, you don't know better. But you know, but in Christians who have the favor of God and eternal life set before them, it is deeply criminal to seek the praise of people you don't know. For it is turning away from the bread of heaven to feed upon ashes. This love of indiscriminate praise is an odious, superfluous, wanton sin, and she should be put away with a manly hatred as something irrational and degrading. And here's the best line. I shared this with a lot of the regional directors recently, and they were all like, oh, we need to hear this. This is this. Shall man, born for high ends, high purposes, the servant and son of God, the redeemed of Christ, the heir of immortality, go out of his way to have his mere name praised by a vast populace? I mean, it's so empty. That's why in the tradition, vanity is also known as vain glory. Like you're seeking glory and praise and attention from people you don't know. And you really only have a handful of people that really know you. That's the ones you want to live an honorable life. And if they notice, and not that you're doing it for the praise, but like, it's so much more meaningful. Like when I have a good friend like Curtis say, hey, great job on this. Or, hey, I noticed you went out of your way. Like that's meaningful. You know, now don't get me wrong. I get people that will tell me all the time. They'll post me, you know, or message me on Instagram. And Darshri, I really appreciated your book. Nothing wrong with that. I am grateful to know, you know, and it helps me as a writer to know this is connecting. That's good. You know, so nothing wrong with that, but like you can tell there's a whole generation of people that they've grown up in this world and they're finding their identity online in social media. And that's like they're begging for attention. They're up here going, okay, here I am, friends, everybody, I'm here. And like it's like they want attention and praise. And I'm not saying everybody does it. I know people do social media and they do it very well and they're not attached to it. But you can also, and many of our own leaders and focus have admitted that they know their own attachment, you know, and they know their peers' attachment in this space. We don't want to seek praise there. If you have that tug on your heart that you post something and you have to always see, like, oh, who's following, who's liking, and like that's a waste of time. But it's more than that. I'm finding my identity in a not a healthy place. We're made for something so much greater. Let's seek the praise of God and the praise of virtuous men.
Yes. Wow, that's beautiful. And that's quite a great reflection on today's culture and a lot of what young people might be working through. And what's the virtue to overcome that? And what are some best practices would you recommend for that encountering?
Yeah, well, I would say, I mean, on one hand, the virtue is humility, of course, right? That I'm not worried about other people's attention, you know. But I think the antidote is actually friendship. Real friendship, not friends, but real friendship, which again, you don't have with that many people. Dr. Chris Bloom, you know him, my good friend from Augustine Institute. He was up here recently at Focus last month, and we did a little symposium for some leaders about some of these things. And this was his whole point in his little brief. He gave a short 10-minute reflection, but his whole anecdote was just on like let's remember what really matters is friendship. And he called it the good wine of friendship. You know, that's what you want to sip on. He talked to some of the RDs, regional directors here, quoted him later and said, oh, they love that he described marriage is basically one lifelong conversation. You know, and that's what friendship is. You know, you're in conversation with real people right in front of you. But to go, like, again, I was at SEEK and it was awesome. Really, I want to be clear. I met over 100, 200 people, like, shake their hands, sign their books, you know, hundreds of people, you know, I met. And it was great. And I really enjoyed doing that. So, but we actually talked about it. I was on a panel, Father Mike and I, and I just said, we all know, we do love, Father Mike loves all of you in a general way, just as I do. But Father Mike loves those people in a very particular way. And I was pointing to his students at the Newman Center up at the University of Duluth, where he serves. You know, Father Mike is known as this, Father Mike Schmitz, we're talking about here, number one podcast in the world, Bible of the Year. All it was amazing, all this, right? And he's done all these YouTube videos, millions of people watched around the world. But more important than that, Father Mike Schmitz is a father. You know, and so he and I chatted about that a bit, and like why he intentionally, that's where he finds his identity. That's his real life. And I think young people could be mistaken. Catholic young people could be, oh, I want to be the next Father Mike. I want to be a lay Father Mike. I want to have my own platform, my own YouTube channel. That's dangerous. You know, what you want to do is give your life to a few people right there in front of you. Now, again, I have a podcast. I have a YouTube channel. You have a podcast. There's nothing wrong with these things. But if we're thinking a lot about them, if we're spending a lot of time and we're trying to find our identity there, I think that's dangerous. So the anecdote is you spend a lot of time with real friends in real conversation about real things, the highest things in life. And if you do that, it's so easy because that's what we're longing for. We're longing for communion. I'm longing to like be connected with others. We're made for communion, like because we're in the image and likeness of the Trinity. But the devil's got us seeking superficial communion online. And it doesn't mean you can't develop a friendship with someone online. My wife has made friends through social media with people that she then gets to know in real life in person. And the social media served that. But it's the real life in person that matters, not the online kind of thing. So
That's a great reminder. And I think especially for this audience and those who are single oftentimes are in the hustle culture of I'm trying to get to that next step in my career, the next dream job, and or building a platform, entrepreneurship. And I'm going through this right now where it's all right, just got to get my presence out there so people know who I am and can come to me as a resource as I build a business, as I build a coaching business and so on. But it's easy to forget the whole reason we do all these things to begin with is so that we can have relationships and strong relationships. Like the to-do list, I say sometimes that we don't need to have our to-do list completely done for us to encounter somebody else, to have a friend. The to-do list is there to support our friendships and our relationships. But ultimately, really, our call is to communion, as you said, our call is to relationships. And you also mentioned another obstacle, which was prudence or a lack of prudence. Tell us a little bit about what you...
Yeah, I'll do that one quicker here. I think this is a fundamental like weakness challenge for the younger generation. Not everyone suffers from it, but it is a challenge more broadly in the generation. Meaning, you know, first of all, Aristotle, Aquinas point this out. It's hard to have prudence in your youth, you know, because you only gain prudence through life experience. So you don't have a lot of experience in youth, so you're not going to have it. That's perennial. Aristotle's writing about that, you know, long before Jesus Christ. so that's true. The challenge today, and it's kind of tied to the social media thing we just talked about in vanity, is I think a lot of young people, on one hand, are afraid to be mentored and discipled in a way that helps them grow in prudence. Because I have to leave a good impression. I want to make it look like I've got it all together. And so Aquinas explains in Aristotle, how do you grow in prudence when you're young? You have to learn from the wisdom of your elders. So there's a couple of things working against the younger generation in today's culture for doing that. They're afraid to ask for advice from their culture because from their elders, because I don't want my boss to think I don't know it. And so I've seen this over and over again. We've seen it here in the Focus office. Young people, they're running. Oh, I got it. It's all good. And then you find out it wasn't all good. And all they had to do is come. And we're not going to look down on them if they don't know the answer. Actually, I always tell people, like when they first start working for me, I'll just often say, hey, you're going to make mistakes. There's going to be many times you're not going to know what to do. And that's okay. Please do not feel you have to impress me. That is, if you feel you have to impress me, then that's going to cause problems. Because it's not about what I love what 1 Samuel says. Man looks on outward appearance, but God looks on the heart. I don't care about the outward appearance. I want to know like where you're at with it. And if you have questions, I actually feel more confident in you. If you're coming to me with questions, Dr. Tree, what do you think about this? How should we go about this? I'm not sure what the answer is here. I love that. You don't have to impress me, you know, because it's showing you're being careful, you're wanting to learn. And I think many times, and this is, by the way, this isn't just a Catholic point. I've read people in the business world have talked about younger generation stepping into the office place and not wanting to seek the counsel. There's a guy here in Denver who just got elevated, got a big promotion, and he was surprised they gave it to him. He thought there were other more talented people in the business. So he asked the one of the VPs of the company, "Why did you ask me? Why did you want me to do this role?" And they said, "Because you seek counsel. You come and seek advice. You don't try to impress us. You want to learn, and you're the kind of person who's right." I think that's brilliant. I know we're going to run out of time here, but the second thing that keeps us younger generation from doing it is the younger generation has kind of because of social media, I think, and because of technology, they've been told constantly, "Well, you know technology, you know social media, so you know it." Those old people like Dr. Sri, he doesn't really know this, or whatever. Older people don't know enough, and they've been fed this message that, "Oh, here's where the culture's trending. You know how to use all this. Other people don't know this." And they've been praised from their childhood. They've gotten trophies, you know, and participation medals, you know, for whatever, you know, and so they've been constantly given inflated grades. They unfortunately have been told how great they are. And so when they come into the workforce and they think that, "Well, I've got a lot of the answers already." And that's a dangerous thing. So I think those, the vanity, and then also the unfortunate, you know, what do you call it? The trophy culture, you know, the self, you know, affirmation, all the affirmation that was given, you know, I think left people in this generation many times not thinking they need, "I don't need that advice. I don't need that wisdom of the elders. I actually know better how to do this." I've met people, I've met people that you could tell they think that they know evangelization better than Curtis Martin. Curtis Martin is the founder of Focus. And Curtis is humble. He knows he has a lot to learn. And I learn a lot from the younger missionaries in Focus. You know this, Chad. I go around, I talk to the RDs, I talk to the team directors, I talk to the missionaries, because I learn from them. And so I really believe they have something really important to contribute. But that being said, for someone to just think, you know, "I actually know how to run this better," and you kind of pick up on that sometimes, it's kind of like you just kind of detect on it, you kind of smile and go, "Yeah, you got another decade or two, buddy, before
you
better be mentored and really be formed well, or you're not going to be able to do it." So,
yeah, thank you so much for sharing your prudence, your wisdom here, and all that you've learned over the years in ministry. I just have a couple of questions as we wrap up here. What do you have coming down the pipe here? I know that I didn't mention All Things Catholic, your podcast, so people can check that out. We'll leave a link in the show notes for ways to connect with you. But what do you have? What's new for you in terms of books or other materials?
Well, I would say my wife and I have a brand new book. Like, this is only for single people. So, but if they have friends or they hope to be married someday, we have a brand new book out on marriage that just came out. It is about living virtuous life in marriage and family life. So that's called The Good, the Messy, and the Beautiful, The Joys and Struggles of Real Married Life. We're coming up on Lent here soon. So I have a book that just came out this last year. It's called Pocket Guide to Stations of the Cross. So it's a creative ways to incorporate stations in your daily life. It's not this big thing you have to, "Oh, I don't have time to get to the parish, and I don't like the fish fry anyway. I'll ever get stations in." Like, you could actually pray stations in your office. I pray it in the car. There's easy ways to do it that many Catholics don't know about. And it's a beautiful, powerful tradition. So important. It's the earliest of the traditions. I'm going to Israel later this week, and that's where it began. People wanting to go and walk in Jesus's footsteps and remember his passion. They were doing that right from the beginning. Those first women going to the tomb of Jesus. That's what we're entering into. So that book, The Pocket Guide, Stations of the Cross, is also my other new little project.
Wonderful. Yeah. What timing given to us from God that this, we're doing this recording right around Lent, where we can promote that for you. And one other thing, how can our listeners find you and follow you?
Well, you mentioned my podcast, so All Things Catholic with Edward Sri. It's key you put my name in. If you not just my last name, if you put in only Sri, you'll find an Indian Hindu guru. So you got to put Edward.
Not the same.
Yeah. And then you find the real one. You can find that on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, whatever platform it's there. They can find me there. They can find me on Facebook, Instagram. And my website is edwardsri.com, edwardsri.com.
Awesome. And final question that I ask my guests And it's just there's this phrase that I like to use. It's God inspired, the God inspired life. And I always ask my guests the same question. What does it mean to you to live a God inspired life?
Oh, being attentive in prayer, being like Mary in Luke 2:19, keeping and pondering all these things in our heart, to really be led by the Holy Spirit. So here we go.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Prayer, our relationship with God, pondering what God is speaking to us in living accordingly. That is an absolutely beautiful way to know and live our lives. So thank you so much, Dr. Sri, for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. God bless.
God bless. This episode of the 8th Day Coaching Podcast is over. Just a reminder, I will leave a link to my free ebook, Breaking the Cycle of Pressure and in Action, down in the show notes. It's written especially for Catholic singles. It is very concise, it has great content, and it also has some exercises that you can go through for yourself. I also want to encourage you to engage in these conversations on my social media channels, as that's a way we can have more of a dialogue. All these resources will be provided in the show notes, and if you have received any value out of this episode, the best way you can give back is to share this podcast with others and leave a 5-star rating. Live inspired. Live God inspired.